CliffCentral.com.
Oh, yes, we have managed to get together this Tuesday morning, and everybody is in good, rude health. The sun is up. It's a beautiful day. We're heading towards the final run of 2021. Yeah, just a couple of days, and people will be starting their holidays. Kids will be finishing up with school. Be thinking about next year already. I'm not trying to put pressure on you, I promise, but it's just around the corner. You know that, right? Let me just look at something. I just want to... Let me actually scare you a little bit. What the hell? I mean, in for a penny, in for a pound. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 weeks to Christmas. 5 and a half. 5 and a half weeks to Christmas. Sorry. Had to do it. Somebody's got to tell you. And as I said yesterday at the start of the show, all those plans that you had to, like, do all the ambitious things and... You know, 2021 is going to be my year, and, well, if that isn't already happening for you, just, yeah, cut your losses. It's like, yeah, you can have 2022, maybe. Because, let's just face it, the whole of humanity, with the possible exception of, I don't know, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, right? The rest of us have all gone, not the best 2 years we've ever had. No matter who you are, right? So you might have had small little things that have happened for you along the way that have made you feel, yeah, it's not so bad. I'm not the worst off among the human race, but I don't think anyone has relished these last 2 years. I don't think anyone's gone, 2020 and 2021 are the best years ever. Even the most optimistic.
Well, I did start working at Cliff Central. I mean, I had to go completely the opposite direction. So it has actually been maybe the best two career years of my life. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on... So I'm quite the opposite, actually. I am that person.
I mean, but this is kind of, you know, you do go against the grain. I mean, like, if everybody's swimming in this direction, then you like swimming in that direction. That's kind of how you are as well, which is very individual. So, Lebang, how are the kids? I see such cute pictures of your kids on Instagram.
Oh, thanks, guys. They're good, except they're getting on my nerves. They're all awake right now. As we speak, every single one of my kids are up. When I got up at 5, they all got up. Mm-hmm. And now it's a thing of, what do they do? Because, you know, it's too early. So we've just been trying to keep them busy. It's been havoc. But at the same time, it's kind of nice because it means at like 10, they'll take their first nap of the day. And then, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a science to it. So we'll see how that goes. But they're good.
Yeah, some people moan when they've got like one kid. And I was talking to some friends of mine. They're expecting twins in a little while. And they're like, oh, they're so nervous about these twins. I'm like, ha, 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 I know a woman's got four kids. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, you're twins.
They'll be all right. They'll
survive. Now, humans have done pretty well, if you consider it. Like, kids are definitely one of the most stressful things. I heard a brilliant interview the other day. I've been listening to so many podcasts. Every time I get in the car, while I'm doing exercise, pretty much everything. And I actually caught up with what you guys got up to last week. Just, you know, out of pure curiosity, just to see, you know, whether it was as good as everybody tells me it was while I was away, and it was. So well done on that front. But they were comparing, like, the happiness levels, and this is no surprise to parents, even if they haven't admitted it up to now. But the happiness of a person who has not had kids in most countries is higher than the happiness of parents, right? Because parents have stresses that, you know, whether your kid is 4 years old and absolutely terrible and going through the most difficult stage that a kid can go through. I mean, most parents agree that between 2 and 4 is the worst. And then you got those parents at the other end whose kids are like 18, but they're starting to drive and they're starting to party and they've got bad friends and the stress just never really stops. So they've done a number of happiness surveys for whatever happiness is worth, because that shouldn't be your only goal in life, although it's not a bad one to have. And they compared this stuff. But what's interesting is that they found in countries where they've got good services, like the schools work properly, there are parks, and there's social welfare for those parents who really are not able to afford things, where there's good medical care, where there's after-school care that's laid on, and, you know, where countries basically are doing a lot of the work for the parents, at least in terms of providing services and financial assistance, that those parents are way happier than the non-parents, which is interesting. And then guess which country in the world reckons that kids make them happier more than any other country? I was surprised by this. Didn't expect it.
Denmark.
No. Although Denmark is, as always, high up. You know, Denmark always scores high on all of these things that you, that are supposed to be good indications of general life happiness.
Somewhere in Europe, definitely.
It's not, actually. It's in the U.S. In the U.S., they reckon that, people in, not particularly out of the big cities in America. So, in other words, the non-urban-dwelling Americans, the smaller towns, the villages, the little rural farm areas, those people apparently rate their happiness since having children much higher than in any other country and in any other part of America. So I thought that was interesting. I wonder what it is, because maybe, you know, the rest of us in the world are like looking at kids, and for many people, kids are part of, and I mean, you can't even make them work anymore, right? I mean, you can't put your kids to work.
Tragically, yeah.
But they used to be part of the workforce. So people used to have kids because then when the kids grew up, they could manage like growing stuff and all that kind of stuff around the house. They were actually a useful pair of hands. You can't do that anymore with kids. They have to go to school and they cost you money. So that's not the reason. In many parts of the world, the women don't have the right to choose when they become pregnant. That's also a big problem. So those countries, you know, they'll fall through the cracks as well in the survey. But I did think it was interesting that in the U.S., people rate themselves as much happier once they've had kids, certainly throughout the most of the U.S., whereas people in other parts of the world are kind of half and half on this. But I know Bulelo, you, for example, you're not interested in that. You're happy to not have kids. You've got your life organized. You wouldn't think maybe you could be even happier? It could be another challenge in your life with having children?
Well, because of just how the last 10 years of my life have gone, I never want to say never, because at 25, the things that made me happy revolt me at 35, that I was doing then. Yeah. So it wouldn't be very logical to say at 45, I might need rugrats, but preferably not as it stands. I'd like actively for the next 5 years, keep them off my radar. Right now, I always say, I have a saying that I'm trying to live by every day. Girlfriends and children are always better if they're somebody else's.
Achtenini Hook says, that explains why my dad left. Ha ha. Oh my God. Oh, that's hectic. Jeez, that is hectic. And then someone saying, the Vatican. Those boys work really hard at the Vatican. Oh my God! All right, that's from Corona's boy.
It's getting dark.
It's getting dark immediately. We've just started the show and it's already going there. Oh wow! I don't know. I mean, I just thought it was an interesting survey because they also worked out that people are, and we've discussed this before on the show. If you lose R100, it feels much worse to you than if you get R100. You know, the good of getting R100 is never going to be as powerful as the bad of losing R100. So if you've just met someone after something terrible has happened to them, apparently something slightly less terrible that happens to them actually makes them happier. So in other words, if you had something horrible happen to you, let's say you injured yourself really badly. You fell off a ladder and you've broken your leg. Apparently, if you broke your leg, so you've fallen off the ladder and you've broken your leg, that feels worse to some people than if you fell off the ladder, broke your leg, and then a day later bit your tongue.
Got you.
Because somehow the less painful thing that comes next actually somehow makes it. I mean, working out human happiness has got to be one of the most complicated things psychologists and scientists are trying to figure out, and they're doing all sorts of studies to figure this stuff out.
Yeah,
it's a very new thing.
Hmm.
Yeah, you've experienced like a big sum of pain on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
If the pain is a little bit less on Tuesday, you're grateful that it's not the same big sum of payment was on Monday. You learned from that.
Right.
You know, I kind of get it.
Yeah, I think we chase happiness, and I don't know if that's enough for most people, because
no.
Some people will voluntarily, like you choose actively to have a bit of pain in your life. Like, that's why you run as far as you do. That's not pleasure. That doesn't feel like an orgasm or a good meal or a, you know, relaxing day at the pool. But you love it.
I will die on this hill. Is that so? I don't believe the point of life is happiness.
As long as you don't lie, die on Lone Hill while you're on a run, that would be bad.
I wouldn't be caught dead in Lone Hill. Please, yeah.
Go on.
Please, I'm not. But that was good. That was good.
I did like you. That. Carry on.
No, I did like that though. is that there is absolutely no way to this happiness without suffering. And you can measure, you can correlate directly, at least in my life, and it's anecdotal, the amount of suffering I've done will always equate and has always equated to the amount of happiness I get from whatever I do. You know, the deeper I go into an endeavor, the harder I try in relationships, whatever it may be, that always makes me happy. You have to go through the pits of hell. The deeper you go, I really believe in order to be happy, you must suffer. There is salvation in suffering.
It's the risk aspect. You must be able to sacrifice and lose a whole lot in order to gain a whole lot more. Mm-hmm. And people aren't willing to risk, and they aren't willing to lose anymore. They just want to sort of arrive at the grand prize.
Well, to go to both of your points, the same interview that I was listening to, these guys are talking about how there's a sweet spot of pain and difficulty in life. There's a sweet spot of, like, suffering. So if you suffer too little, like, let's say you've spent most of your life, you haven't really lost anyone who's close to you, you haven't been through massive physical trauma or emotional trauma, you've had a pretty easy life, to put it in inverted commas. You know, like, let's just say you've been mostly lucky and you haven't encountered too much arduous ugliness in your life. Those people tend to not be very resilient. And they tend to have a very low pain threshold. In other words, the moment anything in their life is slightly interrupted, they fall apart. You know what I mean? So that's no good. But then on the other end, there are people who've gone through extraordinary traumas. You know, they've lost everything. They have been humiliated and broken, and they've been abused, and their life has just been trauma after trauma after trauma. Those people also tend to be so resilient that they have a very low pain threshold at the end of it. And in terms of resilience, they tend to crack very easily. So apparently there's a space somewhere between there where you experience, I suppose, an optimal, even though it's not the right word, an optimal amount of suffering that gives you maximum resilience, maximum pain threshold, and an ability to deal with stuff really easily. That's where we all want to be, apparently. So, I mean, this sounds completely counterintuitive, but you should aim in your life to have a moderate amount of suffering. You shouldn't seek it out, because that's probably unhealthy. But you also shouldn't avoid, at all costs, suffering, because then you end up a pretty weak person. And Marco says, being disabled, I can relate. You know, that's true. Suffering and happiness are not on a continuum, apparently. So one end is just pure suffering and the other end is pure happiness. Apparently what we need as people is we have to experience these two different continuums, and you have to have a little bit of both in order to have a meaningful life. If you have nothing but happiness in your life, you just live this idyllic, rose-tinted, halcyon-type, easy piece of piss life, where you spend your whole day just drinking cocktails and being happy and, you know, having tremendously joyful experiences. Apparently that is not a life. And people who have lived those kinds of lives, their depth of experience is very shallow. So maybe this will make some people feel better this morning. And this is not my theory, by the way. I can't claim it. I'll tell you who the guy is, because I found it pretty fascinating, and perhaps, you know, you will too. It's worth listening to. I often listen to Sam Harris, and he's very, you know, he's a very smart guy, but he sometimes has the most incredible guests on, and this was definitely one of those. It's always like, it's difficult to listen to these things because they're not, this is not like easy listening. This is not something that you, you know, I hope this show is easy listening for you. I hope this show is, you put it on while you're doing other stuff and you don't have to focus and concentrate and rewind if you missed something. But if you listen to this show that I'm talking about now with Sam Harris, it's really like heady stuff. You don't get to, you don't get to fall asleep or kind of have it on while you're doing a million things. If you're not concentrating, it's not going to work for you. So that's pretty amazing. Anyway, that was the episode he did on the 2nd of November with, he's always got interesting guests on, but I thought that would be an interesting thing to talk about this morning. And Robin says, always celebrate the little victories. In fact, Robin made the point earlier that in the Bible, they celebrate finding a lost sheep or a coin. And they always had a celebration when that happened. Well, again, goes back to how we regard the loss of something. Like if you find, and I'll explain this to you really simply. If you went to, let's say you had the most incredible holiday. This actually happened to me just the other day. You had a really good 4 days away with some friends and you enjoyed yourself. You were in the sun. You had great food. You had lots of laughter, fun company, just a really good relaxing experience. But on my way back, I thought maybe I'd lost my sunglasses. So instead of thinking, wow, I've just had the most incredible 4 days, all those things I mentioned, life is pretty optimal, I'm sitting on the way back going, oh, I think I've left those sunglasses there. And then when I get home and I unpack my bag, I see I didn't forget my sunglasses. And I'm like, oh, yay, but that's stupid. Right? That's stupid, stupid, stupid. And I know that logically that makes no sense at all because it's a pair of, I mean, like the weekend cost more but delivered more than the cost of the pair of sunglasses. And yet it still feels like a loss if I'd left them behind. And when I discover that I haven't left them behind, it fills me with joy, which is so dumb. But I think this is how we are. And the more we can figure out, you know, what kind of stupid stuff is going through our heads, whether we like it or not.
So there's a guy called Epicurus, right, who mistakenly people sort of attribute the what you're talking about to Epicurus. Actually, Epicurus was never into the grandiose life. Anyway, I don't really want to explain why people think Epicurean is drinking lots of wine and whatever. He was never into that. But he did a really interesting thing. Was he gave modern day society something called the commune as we know it today. He really is the first big figure because he said, you know, this whole living in Athenia and in the city, forget that. We're going to move into a commune. And he said a happiness for him, this is where I think the confusion came, was so he decided it's not enough to live with my or see my friends all the time because these are the people that make me happy. Mm-hmm. I have to live with them all the time. So commune, we go and do that. But then he said, okay, that's only one part of it. Now we're going to toil in the field. So guys, we're not going to go and buy from the markets. What we'll do to survive is we must do the toiling part, right? Because there's a limitation to we're just hanging around, having sex, having a great time. Is that's not the mix. And then he said, obviously, you need to look after yourself and keep yourself alive. So to complete the cycle, they would sell their goods as like a commune in Athens and then come back and live in their commune. So, I mean, he speaks, I don't know whether this would have been an Epicurean. It sounds very much around his sort of philosophy. But Epicurus spoke exactly about what you're talking about in terms of achieving that sweet spot and always struggling and toiling towards, happiness. But he didn't put it that way. So it's a really, really interesting philosophical thing you're talking about.
So I like your definition because I haven't actually explored this very much. And I know philosophy is more of an in-depth discussion with you than it is with most people. You actually have read this sort of thing. I'm much more pedestrian about it. But I always understood Epicureanism as being like someone who was just into the luxuries and into pure indulgence and happiness.
You know, completely wrong. So Epicurus... Yeah, so he was well known for saying he didn't eat fish often because he said it was too expensive. And in one of his famous letters, he sent a letter to his friend and he said, send me a wheel of cheese so that I may know what a feast is. So he actually didn't like that. What he said was, I want the people I love around me, and I want to have sex and have a good time more often. And that got confused for the grandiose. And he wasn't into luxuries. He was into keeping people he loved around him, the toil of the field, and just being out of the city and the nonsense and being away from stuff.
So again, it sounds like a meaningful life and a life where you have maximum amounts of joy and pleasure, but you're not overindulgent and you don't become a louche person who just does nothing but look for pleasure every day. So you did believe there was a certain amount of work and suffering that gave meaning to life as well.
And from him and within sort of Aristotle's theories came a word called eudaimonia, which is what we're essentially talking about.
Before,
and eudaimonia is it's to say at the end of the day when you go to bed, that feeling of I gave it all is what Epicurus was obsessed with. I gave it all, and when you go to sleep, you're not exhausted because you boozed up or whatever it is. You left it all out there on that day, and it's that state. And it's intrinsic. No one can tell you to feel eudaimonia. It must come from you to go, oh, yeah, today I left it all in. I'm exhausted. I sleep. Yeah, it's called eudaimonia. And that's what he was always seeking. There they are.
Well, I just want to give Marco some credit here. He says he managed to put on his seatbelt the other day on his own after 8 years that brought me joy. Small victories. Of course, Marco was disabled and has been in a wheelchair. And like this guy used to be one of the fittest, most physically unbelievable specimens in South Africa. And since the disability, obviously life has been full of challenges, the kind that those of us who talk about this stuff theoretically will never completely understand. And Marco, I think that is so fucking great, dude. You say small victory, but that's not small.
And it's a big one.
That's huge. That's, again, like meaning is discovered through having a tough time, not through just, you know, the surface life where everything's great. And I often find what's useful to me, and I seriously don't get depressed, but I get a little bit disconnected and I detach from things. I kind of pull back and I become a little bit distant with people. And what I need to do sometimes to just get back in the game and to start paying attention to things again is to just draw up a list of all the things that are going on in my life that I'm happy with. You write them down. All the things that I should be grateful for. And all the things that I'm proud of and that, you know, working and that are adding positive kind of value, not just to my life, but to other people's. And then on the other side, I write down the things that are pissing me off, that worry me, that give me anxiety, that I think are crap, that I could manage better, that I feel are, you know, weaknesses perhaps. And then after I've done a comprehensive list of both, I'll cross one off for a commensurate one on the other side. And if I end up with more positive, which is almost always the case, if you actually do an analysis, then you just go, What am I actually worried about? You know?
Awesome. Yeah. Gratitude.
So Roomdoor says, check out Stoicism. Yeah. I mean, that's something that Bolelo's brought up a number of times. Epicurus is the bomb, says Robin. Ryan says, Ryan's falling asleep with this conversation around meaning and purpose, because Ryan's obviously been boozing it up and chasing the fun life. I'm making all kinds of assumptions here, but that's what I think. So listen to this. Corona's Boring says to Marco, my friend's cousin is farming and he's a quadriplegic. I can see it hurts when he, I think, pulls a fist. Maybe that is it. The only thing that limits you is yourself. Curls a fist. Okay.
Wait, so he's a quadriplegic and he's a farmer.
That must be tough, eh? Jesus.
No, people are unstoppable.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a hard life.
Tracy says, my eldest son's annual cancer checkup came back clear last week. Now, that is a victory. That is phenomenal. Yo, that's great. Carl says, oh, fucking Marco, I put my seatbelt on by myself every day on my own, and I don't have a disability. Thanks, Carl. It's always good to get some, good to get some asshole comments from Carl on the show.
Carl.
This is an interesting point by Chilaco. It says, David Goggins is, Goggins mentions, we all want to take the four-lane highway, but we always step over the shovel. We should instead pick up that shovel and make our own path. Suppose that's a very good point. King Solomon was the wisest man on earth, and he partied and lived a life of hedonism before returning to the simple life. Yeah, I mean, he also had he had so many mistresses, King Solomon, and so many wives, that they reckon that if he had sex with each of them, he'd have to wait a full year and a half before having sex with the same one again.
What a life.
And this is the guy that God chose to build his temple. So if you think you're a bad person, give yourself a break as well this morning. Just, you know, take a little step back and give yourself some room to move. You don't need to be too hard. I think that's a good point.
What a life.
All right, so we've got two shows that we want to quickly promote here. The first one is, of course, the MKT show, and Bolelo's always busy finding really exciting new guests, and he's lining up some incredible things for next year. But what have you got on the show for the rest of this week?
We've got Paulo Diaz from That 80s Show, which you can also catch, of course, on Cliff Central. So Paulo, of course, a co-host of the show.
Yep.
He'll be on today. Look out for something over the next 3 weeks that we'll be doing with a new partner that'll be coming on board.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we can officially sort of start announcing that on the from the first week of December, you'll see some content we'll be doing from America with the NBA.
Awesome.
And Kansas University. Yay. So that sort of stuff's being tied up. It's a really exciting time.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's terrific. And the other show I want to tell you about, in case you haven't already listened, in which case we're embarrassed and horrified and you need to immediately change your behavior, that is Life with Lebang, which is on a Thursday from 9 to 10. So what have you got coming up?
Yeah, so this Thursday is really exciting. I'll be chatting to a child psychologist. Not from a personal perspective. I mean, I've never had to, but I do realize that there's a big need for us to just get like some medical stats and reasons as to why our kids are the way they are. So I'm really excited just to unpack, just to chat, just to answer some questions and yeah, just, you know, understand why things are the way they are. So I'm really excited for that show. It's going to be this Thursday from 9 till 10 in the morning on cliffcentral.com.
Magic. Very, very good.
Awesome.
So Lebang wants to also warn us, because there is Black Friday coming up, and I've seen so much of this stuff on my email, on messages. I got the strangest WhatsApp yesterday from some number that must be from another country. Like, oh, we've got this great business opportunity. I mean, obviously, I knew it was bullshit straight away. But these guys, these scammers are on full output at the moment. They are sending thousands of emails out. They're phishing everywhere they can. They're trying to steal your money. Please be awake. Please be aware.
They're literally working on overdrive right now because they know people have been saving up for this moment. They know people are desperate for sales, so they are willing to do any and everything. Now's the time to be on guard. If anything, don't buy anything at all.
Try not to
change anything with your shopping habits. Just keep it the way it's been. But just be careful. Oof, it's tricky.
Have you also been receiving a lot of these spam emails and these? Here's the invoice that we promised you, and you think, I'm pretty sure I wasn't expecting an invoice from like Guatemala.
I'm like, where are you guys getting my number? Let's start there.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, like Truecaller sometimes will show you that don't answer. But when it doesn't tell you, obviously you answer, and you're like, oh, okay, cool, what's up? Then it's just some conversation about somebody's life insurance is paid out, they need you to sign. To sign.
And you're like, yeah. I didn't know I had an Uncle Leo.
Dude.
Yeah.
So, but are you the type, Lebang, do you entertain the conversation with people? Like,
remember, I've been burnt. Remember 2017, Black Friday, I got scammed to like the death. So since then, I've just been on guard. Like, I'm not playing. I'm not that person that entertains anything. I literally just mind it. In fact, if I do entertain it a little bit, I get to the point of telling that person, please stop scamming people. Just stop what you're doing. I confront them and I say, just stop it, because this is just tiring. There's people out there who work hard for their money, and here you guys are just trying to take our money. Just fuck off and leave us alone.
Right.
Speaking of scams.
Yes.
Gareth, You once got canine scammed. Do we have an update on that situation?
I've got a private investigator looking out for that scammer, and she's chasing him down, and she's apparently got a whole lot of info already, and I'm not going to give up. I'm willing to spend even more money to catch this person out and to make an example of them by using whatever media we have access to bring them in. I don't like being taken for a fool, and I don't think anybody does, but I'm just worried that people who are much more vulnerable and people who are much more who don't have the kinds of platforms that we have to tell these stories are also going to fall victim to these kinds of people, and I'm not gonna let this guy get away with it. So I'm after him, and I'm not gonna stop, and neither is this private investigator. So we're going hard. This person will be brought at least before the court of public opinion. And you know, if there's ever been a place for like cancel culture, let it be this. Then it'll be doing something good. Mfundo says there's a precious from Nigeria who wants my bank details to deposit the money, and then I help her escape the refugee camp on that side. Lucky me, Mfundo. Yes. Kurtso says clearly the Papia Act isn't as effective as it's meant to be. It does nothing. This Papia Act. It's nothing. It's useless. It's a waste of time. Freedom Fighter says, I saved so much last Black Friday. I bought nothing. Yeah.
That's the trick.
That's the trick. You don't want to buy any. You don't need a TV. So what if the TV's cheaper? You've got a TV. Even if your TV isn't as fancy or as big or as HD, if you've got a TV already, don't go buy a new TV. That's exactly the opposite of what all the advertising is going to be telling you. But trust us, like, we actually care about you.
But it's a little bit tricky, and I know I just said you shouldn't buy anything, but my TV broke last week.
Uh-oh.
So I'm kind of like, and not that it broke for the fourth time.
Oh, boy.
So it keeps breaking, and I keep taking it back to the same guy. Like, it's the fourth time, so now I'm like, look, I don't have a choice, and I haven't even had this TV for over a year. So I kind of might have to get something.
Uh-oh.
In the words of one Dory van Logrenberg,
yes.
Let it go, let it go. Let it go.
That's from what that kid's movie Frozen, right?
Frozen.
Yes.
I think I need to just part ways with this.
Just don't get like stampeded at some shop where people are lining up and breaking through the doors to get free TVs or cheaper TVs. Please don't. Just rather pay the price.
But also don't get stampeded anywhere, actually.
No, that's a good call.
I just think that's good life advice.
Right.
That's just a solid PSA.
In general.
Yeah.
All right, so a headline or two. This is very disturbing. Again, not the first time this has happened in South Africa, but a woman found human body parts in her boyfriend's fridge in Soweto. Yeah.
Jesus.
The discovery of disjointed human body parts at the back room of a certain person's dwelling in Protea Glen, Soweto, has left residents shocked and in disbelief. The body parts were discovered by a young woman who was visiting her new boyfriend, who she met on Facebook. It is understood the couple had their first date on Friday when the woman spent the night with the boyfriend in the back room he was renting. Trouble started when the young woman told the boyfriend she was hungry. The boyfriend left the house, giving the woman a chance to look for food in the fridge. This is when she discovered the human body parts. After the grim discovery, she screamed, alarming the community. A retired cop came to investigate the matter and alerted police. The 24-year-old boyfriend was immediately arrested after police discovered only the legs and arms. Anyway, how's that? They're still looking for the head of the person, but it's believed the parts belong to a woman.
Apparently, like, as they arrested him, he tried to commit suicide, like, right there and then.
Well,
just, like, trying to find anything to, like, cut himself, and then they had to, like, handcuff him, because obviously, dude, what are you doing with body parts in your fridge?
So, I mean, that's...
This is our first date.
Maybe this guy would have done us all a favor if we just let him commit suicide, because frankly, that's, you know, I mean, obviously, I don't want people to get away with not being punished for their crimes, and maybe he would be able to find more information about who this woman might have been in the fridge. So best that he is alive. But there's a part of me that goes, someone who's willing to keep human body parts in a fridge is not really the kind of person that we need to give quarter to. And thank God the law doesn't care for my opinion, because I'm not very sympathetic.
on the other side, worst first date of all time?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's pretty
It's got to be up there.
No, it's right up there.
Got to be up
there. So I don't know if you saw this video. You know, I find these things disturbing, but this one was going around yesterday and people were talking about it, so we may as well too. There's a guy called Lynn Kluter who checked into some hotel, and he got into an altercation with the police. Apparently they were complaining that their room wasn't ready. So they went off. Eventually the hotel was like, okay, these people are really dangerous. He was like waving a firearm around and threatening people. So they called the police, and the police arrived. And this guy was – it's the weirdest video because he's wearing nothing. I mean, I've seen it now. So he's wearing nothing. Then he puts on a pair of underpants. Then he starts threatening these people. This is in Krugersdorp somewhere, by the way. And then he starts...
You should have led with that.
Yeah, I know.
Now it's coming together.
You know how in America you get a Florida man, and in South Africa you get a Krugersdorp man? Anyway, this guy, he has like a handlebar mustache and long hair, and I think he thinks he's like the Undertaker from WWE or whatever. And he starts threatening the police, and he says to the policeman, like, it's clear in the video, like, shoot me, why don't you just shoot me, you asshole or whatever. And then he tries to grab the policeman's gun, and the other policeman shoots him, right? So it's all very violent and unnecessary and stupid, but I suppose if you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. And as much as I hate and abhor violence, I have to say I'm digging deep, and I'm not finding a whole lot of sympathy for this guy. If you do stupid stuff like that, I don't know that, you know, the police or anyone else should keep giving you a chance. I mean, if that happened in any other country, and I keep thinking about America, I mean, you just reach for your gun and they'll shoot you.
Yeah, that guy looked like he was high the entire time.
You saw the video too?
I saw the video. It was all over, like, the timeline, and I kept, like, avoiding it because I don't really like to see that stuff. But I saw it, and I was like, this guy is high. You can just see he's not sane at all. No sane human is going to be in that situation and tell a cop, yo, shoot me.
Yeah, the Zulu people have a great saying for this. Uzoi tol into ifunai.
Asking you shall receive. Even the Bible says it.
Right. Well,
Solomon, what a life.
There's also been a lot of controversy over the Miss South Africa organization's decision to send the reigning queen to the Miss Universe pageant held in Israel in December. So many South Africans are against our Lalela Mswane, who's going to Israel. But the Miss South Africa organization has refused to budge on the issue. And good for them, by the way. They're being pressured. They're basically being doxxed. I mean, they're even having a march there. And it's not this is not some kind of march where, you know, everybody's going to be peaceful. I mean, if you look at the participants in this march, they're among the worst people in the country. And their whole issue is that they are in solidarity with the people of Palestine. And they believe that South Africa shouldn't send someone to Israel to participate in this because they're anti-Israel, effectively. So they're going to ruin Miss SA's chance of winning Miss Universe just because they don't like Israel. Now, I don't know how this is her problem. You know, you get two kinds of problems in the world. You get your problems and you get my problems. If I'm Miss South Africa, I want to go and win Miss Universe. And for the people who are not Miss South Africa, to try and involve themselves in her taking part in a pageant is outrageous. I think these people must be ignored. And I hope she and the Miss Universe people and the Miss South Africa people ignore these people because they don't deserve anyone's attention. And effectively, they are trying to, we talk about this, but they're trying to cancel Miss South Africa's opportunities at Miss Universe. You don't get to do that just because you have a political point of view and you don't like Israel. It's not Miss South Africa's problem, and she should not budge, and neither should the Miss South Africa organization. Don't fall for the pressure, because usually these people who are saying these things have lots of bark and no bite. And it's time we stood up to them. And frankly, what happened to, like, standing up for a young woman who is trying to go out there and make herself a winner on an international stage? How about we support her rather than some bullshit political agenda that's miles away? I think it's nonsense. I don't know about you.
I think the fact that this has been Lalela's dream all of her life, and she's this much closer to getting that dream, I think she should literally just pull a big zap sign to everybody and say, screw all of you, I'm going on and doing this. We don't have a right to pull her down and sort of nullify what she wants to achieve because we don't like what's going on there. It's not that deep. It's not that deep. Let her do her thing. If it's that deep for you, you go do something. How about you hop on a plane and go do something that'll actively change the situation there? That's all. Leave her out of your mess. This whole thing really upset me. I was quite annoyed, actually.
Yeah. I wish people would get as passionate about my lack of service in my own country as they do about Israel.
Right.
Like, I really don't care about Israel. I got to tell you. Like, I could not care less. I just could not. Like, around my corner is people sleeping on the street. I'm really fired up about that.
I'm going to say this because I'm still on his WhatsApp spam group, clearly. But Madiba's grandson, Mandla, who now calls himself Nkosi Zwelile Vilile, you know, Mandla Sizwe, Mandla, or whatever. Yeah, he's done a rebrand. Anyway, I mean, like, I don't have any issue with Mandla personally, but he's on this train of, like, boycott and Israel is bad. And I don't know, I think his third wife is, she's a bit of an activist in this respect. I don't know. Anyway, he's one of the people leading it. And I'm thinking, but you're a member of parliament for the Eastern Cape, to your point, Mbulelo. You're a member of parliament for the poorest province in the country. The province with the worst service delivery record at the moment, and you're worrying about Israel?
Really?
And let me tell you, he is an absolute, this is not a secret. I have family, of course, Mtata, and he is an absolute monster, gun-wielding cowboy. He is.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that, but... So I knew him a long time ago, and
deplorable.
I'm not going to climb on that bandwagon. I have no evidence to back that up. All I know is he's an MP for the Eastern Cape, and as a member of Parliament for the Eastern Cape, perhaps that's where his energy should be. I'm just saying,
yeah.
You know, lots of people in that province who need a lot of help, and it's fine for him to be able to do two things at once. Nobody expects him to be unidimensional. But I'm absolutely sure that his energies would be better spent and his time would be better spent on sorting out the people of his own province. That's just my point of view. Anyway, that's all we got time for in the headlines. But luckily for you, we've also got our final episode of Africanalysis to bring you this morning. And we are thrilled, as always, to welcome JJ Cornish for Africanalysis, which is our bi-monthly feature sponsored by the Johannesburg Business School and looking at what is happening around this incredible continent of ours, the things that are happening that are good and that are worth celebrating, the things that are happening in our continent which are scary and are worth taking note of. We try not to shirk our responsibility. And here he is, JJ Cornish. How are you, sir?
I'm immensely well, thanks.
Good. So, JJ, what have we got on the agenda at the moment, and how are we looking as we wrap up the year of 2021 on the continent of Africa?
Well, we've just had the meeting in Paris of people saying, don't take your foot off the gas on the presidential elections in Libya. Mm. Absolutely vital to have these presidential elections next month. And among the candidates is Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, the second son of Muammar Gaddafi.
Wow.
He is wanted by the ICC, has been, since 2011 for crimes against humanity in Libya. But he's standing and insisting on it. He came there with these wonderful brown robes and this beautiful brown turban to sign the papers. The military prosecutor, Mohamed Gardar, is saying don't accept him to the electoral authorities. Don't accept him because he's wanted for crimes and we shouldn't have him as a candidate. But Saif al-Islam, and we know him well in South Africa because he's the guy that came to hire South African mercenaries to go and fight for his father at the time. And he's been in South Africa and done considerable work here, put some of his father's money in this country.
Yeah.
The military prosecutor is also saying don't accept Khalifa Haftar, the rebel leader, who's another one of the candidates in those elections. Now, we really do hope that they do take off those elections, because it's the only thing that's going to, or one of the things that are absolutely vital to bring stability to Libya. But we wait to see,
because there
are all sorts of problems.
Aren't they still trying to find some of Gaddafi's money, or has it largely been recovered? Because the man was immensely wealthy and made himself immensely wealthy while he was president of Libya. And his family obviously are not schlep people. They're not, you know, they're not begging on the street corners and out of favor. This guy's got a good chance of winning the election. Are they still well off?
I think they're still relatively well off. He spent some time on Toll, you know, behind bars. Mm. He was arrested, obviously, after the fall of his father in 2011. But here he is now, large as life, looming on the thing. Where they didn't find all the money, and I mean, there were stories about millions and even billions that was invested in South Africa. The money has not all been found by any means, and so one assumes that that he would have access to some of it at least, and there is no doubt that, you know, he will use that in his campaign. What chances are of winning, I don't know at this point. I'm looking at it quite carefully, and hopefully we can talk about it in the future.
All right. Well, I mean, that's going to be an interesting one to watch. Burkina Faso, there's a country that we mention every now and then, but they've just lost at least 20 people in the worst terror attack in 6 years of conflict. So things are really not going well for the people of Burkina Faso at the moment. This is a horrible story.
Former Upper Volta, the land of the upright or the honest people, is Burkina Faso. That's what it means. And that area, that border with Chad and Mali, near a gold mine there was this attack. It killed 19 gendarmes and one civilian. They fear, though, that the death toll is going to be much higher than this. And no one has claimed responsibility. That's always interesting, you know. And that's happening more and more in terror attacks. Normally, the way they fall over each other to claim responsibility or credit, as they'd like to call it. But, you know, this attack happened despite the fact that you have UN troops there, you have regional troops there, the region, or the five countries in the Sahel are banded together to fight the jihadis. This has happened. So this is, you know, you get this again and again. We've had it in Somalia. We've had it in other countries where the jihadis are driven out, then manage to return and commit acts or commit atrocities like this, and then disappear again, vanish into thin air. And this appears to be the case in Burkina Faso. And what this is doing to their development is absolutely parlous. So it's very, very sad.
Yeah, wow. You do have a positive story for us, and this is about someone who's a former child beggar who's become a bit of a star.
Yes, indeed. How very interesting it is that this man, Mudu Ture, he was sent into a madrasa and was very slow in learning the Quran, which you're supposed to be able to recite by heart. And he was beaten for this and abused for this. Right. So he ran away. He ran to Dakar, to the capital, lived on the streets for several years, and you know, made do as he could. When a couple of Swedish circus performers arrived, and they were helping the disavowed community and teaching them. And Ture actually fell in love with the circus, as it were, and really excelled in this way. He was sent to Sweden for some training, and then toured around the world with circus troops. Now he has returned to Senegal, and he started the troupe called Sensirk. And he wants to help other children off the streets learn to become circus performers and to feel the good fortune that he has felt. I think that's a remarkable story.
It's lovely.
And he talks about the circus as being my therapy. So you were talking earlier about looking for the positive. Yeah, we have Mudu Ture doing that, and, you know, probably turning somersaults while doing it.
Awesome. Obviously, a lot of people are looking at what they might be doing in December. Are there still ructions in Mozambique? Is it still unsafe in some parts of that country? Because I'm sure there are people who want to go to Mozambique for their holiday. It is a beautiful place, and there are lots of South Africans who do regularly go there on holiday. Have we got the all clear?
But by no means, by no means. I think, you know, if I was going to Mozambique, I would go to Maputo. Mm-hmm. And then there's that rather nice restaurant about 4 or 5 kilometers north. That's about where I'd stop. you know, I think certainly to go all the way up to Cabo Delgado, you would be taking your life into your hands. So sure. It's nowhere near. You can bet that if things were settling down, Total, the energy giant, would be back there. So that's the way, I suppose, to look at a country that things are going down. You watch the rats leave the sinking ship. Well, to see if a country's on the up and up, you watch how the international finance starts coming back into the country. You know things are okay. And the French, yeah, of course, are prepared to take more of a chance than others. But so if they stay out, you know, things are still pretty grim.
All right, JJ. Well, this is our last episode for this year, and we'll pick it up and resume in January of – I know it feels like it's a long time away, but it's only a couple of weeks, and we'll be back in with African Analysis. In the meantime, all I can do is really wish you well, and thank you so much for helping us to understand so much more about our continent over the past few episodes. And again, to thank the Johannesburg Business School for not only bringing us the opportunity to hear your own extraordinary experiences and your knowledge of this continent, but also for supporting Africa and for giving it a place where, you know, we can hear these things and creating a platform where we can actually entertain ourselves, indulge ourselves, inform ourselves, and discover so much more about the place that we call home. It's really very special and very important.
Well, if it's the last time I'm going to be speaking to you, probably not, but certainly to our viewers and listeners, let me wish them Joyeux Noël and Bonne Année.
I know that you'll be the first one to be saying those things because it feels like it's still a long way away. But certainly we'll pick this conversation up as we always do in the new year, and I look forward to hearing much more from you. Thank you, JJ. Excellent. JJ Cornish, South African, the African Analysis, rather, and it's brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. Very cool. Very, very so interesting. Cool. Yeah. I mean, where else are you going to hear about Burkina Faso and you know, circus performers in Senegal? This is the kind of stuff that we want to bring you. Very cool. You can get hold of us in the YouTube comments. There are lots and lots of new people who've joined us in the last few weeks, and you are very much welcome. Siobhan saying thank you, Mr. Cornish. Siobhan's new. There are a couple of people here who I haven't seen before. Angie says, currently in Ponte d'Oro, all good this side for holidaying, diving, and dolphining.
So
some news hot off the press from Mozambique. And then lots of other comments about various things that are going on, including Miss Universe, boycott, and so on. And people have very strong opinions about that, too. So I always find it interesting, though. I mean, there's, you know, we talk quite a lot about the idea of what you are and aren't allowed to joke about anymore, and I thought this would be interesting to look at. So featured in this, first of all, is Jerry Seinfeld, and I think it wraps up with John Cleese, but it's three comedians just sharing their thoughts about what they think of the fact that humor has been banished by many people online and many people who consider themselves to be activists. Take a listen to this and then let us know what your thoughts are.
Interviewing Jerry Seinfeld, asking about the gender diversity on the show.
Yeah, okay. I mean, people think it's the census or something. I mean, this has got to represent the actual pie chart of America. Who cares? It's just funny. You know, funny is the world that I live in. You're funny, I'm interested. You're not funny, I'm not interested. Okay. And I have no interest in gender or race or anything like that, but everyone else is kind of with their little calculating, is this the exact right mix? You know, I think that's, to me, it's anti-comedy. It's okay. Anti-comedy. It's more about, you know, PC nonsense. Okay. Then are you making us laugh or not?
Right, right.
The people that complain and all that type of shit, it's a very small group of people, and they're bullies. But a comic tells a fucking joke in a strip mall, right, and all of a sudden they're talking about it. Right. You know, one person gets offended. That's another thing, too. Like, every one of those things, it's like a comic is guilty of telling a joke in a comedy club. That's all they're guilty of.
Right.
And then what I love too is people get offended by the joke, and it's just like he or she didn't tell you the joke.
Right.
If you want to get mad that you heard the joke,
right,
it's the person that blogs about it. It's the person that takes the video or records it.
Right.
The comedian is just guilty of being in a nightclub.
Right.
Where people voluntarily came in and telling jokes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, just because you're sitting at home eating cornflakes now and you hear the nightclub, that's really on you.
Right.
You don't want to hear the nightclub, don't go to the nightclub, and also don't fucking listen to it. To be honest with you, who really gets offended by comedians? Who is walking around? Like, when was the last time you saw somebody, you're a comedian, be like, oh, you guys are so offensive? They always think it's cool,
right,
generally speaking.
Right.
And there's this small group of fucking people. And what I love, too, is they only get offended by shit that has to do with them.
If people can't control their own emotions, then they have to start trying to control other people's behavior. And when you're around super sensitive people, you cannot relax and be spontaneous because you have no idea what's going to upset them next. And that's why I've been warned recently, don't go to most university campuses, because the political correctness has been taken from being a good idea, which is let's not be mean, particularly to people who are not able to look after themselves very well. That's a good idea, to the point where any kind of criticism of any individual or group can be labeled cruel. And the whole point about humor, the whole point about comedy, and believe you me, I've thought about this, is that all comedy is critical. Even if you make a very inclusive joke, like how'd you make God laugh? Answer, tell him your plans. Now, that's about the human condition. It's not excluding anyone. It's saying we all have all these plans which probably won't come, and isn't it funny how we still believe they're going to happen? So that's a very inclusive joke. It's still critical. All humor is critical. If you start saying, we mustn't criticize or offend them, then humor's gone. With humor goes a sense of proportion. And then, as far as I'm concerned, you're living in 1984.
Yeah, I think that's there's that one line that John Cleese says that's just ringing in my ears. If you cannot control your own emotions, then you try to control other people's behavior.
To his point there, we call civilization the intelligent management of human emotions. And I mean, again, that goes back to old Socrates, who was a long time ago. So I couldn't agree more. I absolutely love what he said there. By the way, have you seen The Closer yet? On Netflix?
No.
Dave Chappelle.
With Dave Chappelle.
Oh.
No, but I do believe John Cleese has just cancelled himself from Cambridge University. He was meant to go and speak there. This was all over the internet over the weekend. Somebody told me yesterday. And he decided, because there was an uproar that, you know, he's a comedian who wants... So apparently there was a lecturer who got into trouble because they did a lecture on Hitler, which is kind of important. Because if there are lessons to be learned from Hitler, then let's teach them. Anyway, some flaky person at Cambridge decided to get this lecturer into trouble. So John Cleese, who was scheduled to speak there, just politely declined and removed himself from the speaking circuit at Cambridge, which is his old university, because he said, you know what, I'd rather cancel myself because I once did a Hitler sketch as part of Monty Python, and I don't need this. He's like, he's in his 80s. He doesn't care anymore. So Cambridge gets to miss out on what is a pretty insightful human being. I've met John Cleese 3 or 4 times. He's absolutely one of the funniest and most interesting people I've ever met. And for them to lose out on that is a serious loss to a once great university. I feel very sorry for them that this is what's going on at the moment. Anyway.
Sad.
Therence Cameron agrees with you, Mbulelo. The Closer on Netflix is brilliant.
Oh, yeah. He's the best. And he nails it.
Right.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So good. So good.
Why is everyone so offended, says Therence? Well, they're not. I don't think they really are. This is the point. I think that a lot of this is just play acting. A lot of it is like, oh, I'm so upset. But those people are not losing any sleep over these various things. Do you agree, Lebang? You're nodding.
It's when people have nothing going on, they'll literally latch onto anything that'll make them feel important, anything that'll make them feel like they're a part of something. So if like 10 people on this side are all shouting in that direction, and you haven't even heard what they're angry at, and you'll run along and shout with them because you want to feel like you're doing something and you want to feel like you're a part of something. So you'll run off. A lot of these people have so little going on that anything that happens is enough for them and they'll just run. And that's ultimately the issue. The issue is you guys are just angry at everything and anything. You stand for nothing, and therefore you'll stand for anything. Whereas if you stand for something, then you'll kind of be like, okay, that's not my fight. Or, you know, that one's not for me. But because you've got nothing going on, you'll go wherever the wind blows. And that's the society we live in now. It's shitty.
I don't know. I think there are people who are genuinely, like, involved in and passionate about certain things, but those people are usually doing something. They're usually they're either social workers, or they are involved in education, or they're arranging meetings, or they're doing some. But these people who are like hop on the bandwagon because it's just driving past them on social media, like I don't know how many of those people really care, and that's also why we shouldn't respond to it necessarily. I mean, most of the time, if someone's trying to shut down a comedian, for example, as, you know, Jerry Seinfeld and Bill Burr and John Cleese just said, that's not a person we should be giving priority to. I would rather hear from 100 comedians than from one activist. I just know that the activist is going to be 10 times more boring than any comedian. I just know that. I'm sure that's fairly true, right?
There's a correct answer to I'm offended.
Yeah.
The answer is, oh, that's okay. Because we mustn't directly jump from I'm offended, so I'm correct. That I think that's what John Cleese was addressing as well, is I'm offended. We must now answer that with, oh, no, that's fine. You're well entitled to be offended. What you're not entitled to is to be correct just because you're offended. Let's not make that jump.
The other very funny and very intelligent man who had an answer to I'm offended, his answer, and Stephen Fry, he says, so what? So what?
Yeah.
So what? Like,
yes!
What would you like? Must everything on earth stop because you decided you're like a little bit upset by what someone else said? Please. One of my friends said he was at a dinner the other night, and like there was this bunch of people around the table who were all exactly these kind of people. I suppose you could call them woke. And they were all like basically shutting each other down because anytime anything funny was said, it was considered upsetting to one of the people at the table. And eventually he had enough. He said it was like 10 people. He got up halfway through dinner and he said, I'm not even sure I should pay for this, for my part of this meal, but I am out of here. He was like, I'm gone. I never want to see any of you again.
Wow.
You're the most unpleasant group of people. I mean, this is like a hell of a reaction. He's like, you're the most unpleasant group of people. He said, not one thing that anyone has said here has been acceptable to everyone else, and everyone is climbing into each other. This is the least fun dinner I've ever been at. And he got up and left.
Awesome.
So bad.
Kudos.
What an awesome person.
Anyway, we got lots of other stuff to talk about, and we've got plenty to get to in the next hour. Stick around. CliffCentral.com, Tuesday morning, and we will be back in a moment. CliffCentral.com.